It is amazing to me how many, how sight or the sense of sight and smell just bring memories come flooding back, things you've sort of forgotten about. This time of year, now that they're popping up with these Christmas tree lights, I have to say it does bring back memories of, 50 years ago. I mean, when I was a little boy, not in the church, we would definitely be keeping Christmas. And one of the highlights for me, and this is the one thing I looked forward to every year, my parents have pictures of this, by the way. Every year my dad would set up the O-gauge Lionel train set under the Christmas tree in an elaborate figure eight. And I, as a kid, could sit there playing with those trains for hours. I remember unloading the milk car on the track and then unloading the log car. I mean, it was just so very exciting to me. So I can tell you, in 1971, when I was about 7 years old, it was rather traumatic for me when my parents sat me down and said, "Guess what? We're in the church now." And by the way, this just happened about, 2 weeks before the Christmas holiday. Remember, they sat us down on the couch, and they said, "Guess what? We're not going to be doing Christmas anymore. And by the way, Santa Claus, who came down your chimney every year that didn't exist, because we didn't have a chimney, he doesn't exist either." And I just remember as a seven-year-old boy, I would burst out in tears, or I burst out in tears and cried. Why I cried, I don't remember, but, I always joke with my brother and say, "Yeah, I cried because my parents lied to me." But my brother cried as well. But he cried because we weren't going to be getting any more Christmas presents. So it was a traumatic thing. And then I started to realize, too, that, when we set up the chocolate chip cookies and the milk, my dad was actually the one eating the cookies and drinking the milk. And when we would go to the mall or the store and get our picture taken on Santa's lap, he was actually just a temporary department store employee. So anyway, that brings up, now that we're in this time of year, I figured it's probably a good time to go and do our little Christmas sermonette. Concerning, in fact, we'll just remind ourselves why we're doing this and why we're not doing this. And this year, I decided let's focus on the origins of Santa Claus. Where did he come from? Who is he? And is he as dangerous as we keep thinking he truly is? Well, to start with, actually, before I go too much further, just to help my academic credibility, two of my main sources for this message today came from a site called The Archive and an article entitled The Fascinating Folklore Origins of Santa Claus by Mackenzie Stewart, and it was published in December 2020, and from The Insider, and the article entitled "Here's What Santa Claus Looks Like in 13 Countries Around the World" by Joanna Fantazoi, and it was published in December of 2018. Now, when we think about the character of Santa Claus, we're so used to this plump, jolly, guy with the long white beard running around in red and white clothes, passing out gifts to children, if they're good, and also giving out coal to the bad children. The funny thing was, too, when Garrett was just a little boy, he came home from school and he says, "Kids are teasing me." And they found out we don't keep Christmas, and they said, "You're going to be getting coal this year." So he got teased about it. I don't remember if it bothered him or not, but I just thought it was funny that they were telling him he was a bad kid, which he is not. But the legend of Santa Claus, the Catholics tie it to the 4th century Greek Catholic bishop by the name of Saint Nicholas that lived around what is known as what is today modern Turkey. Now, he is known in the Catholic circles as the patron saint of the poor and the prostitutes. And I guess the reason being is that he would secretly and generously give out gifts to the poor children and save the poverty-stricken girls who are destined to prostitution. Now, in the Middle Ages, which was about 500 AD, the Catholic Church established a festival to St. Nicholas, which was established around December 6th. And the tradition at that time was for leaving gifts for the children. In particular, they would do it on the eve of the St. Nicholas Festival on December 5th. But around the 1500s, during the Protestant Reformation, there was a split in the Catholic Church, which caused big, big problems. And this is the time where they actually changed the festival to St. Nicholas, the patron saint of the poor and the prostitutes. They moved it over to December 25th, or the winter solstice, which, as they said, was closely associated to the birth of Christ. So they, as the Catholics, wanted to identify themselves with St. Nicholas and to try to counteract the current split in the church. Now, according to the Microsoft Encarta Encyclopedia, historians have found, or they say, that the proof, historical proof of this St. Nicholas is actually kind of sketchy. So maybe he existed, maybe he didn't. It's kind of hard to say. But in February 1969, Pope Paul VI removed, quote, St. Nicholas and 92 other saints from the Catholic calendar. Now, not being a Catholic myself, I'm not exactly sure what all that means, but from what I found was that he is not venerated, his veneration as a saint is no longer obligated, but becomes voluntary. And that was because the proof of his historical existence, again, is a little bit sketchy. Now, the next step came from an article on the CB News website, and the article was called Pagan Roots, Five Surprising Facts About Christmas by Stephanie Pappas. She actually coined a term that I thought was kind of interesting. The ancient Christian church had sort of a soft spot for the pagans. Now, the reason being was the Catholic Church at that time in the Middle Ages was spreading all over the world, in particular Europe in that area. And their goal was to convert the pagans. Now, their idea was not to do away with in an attempt to convert the pagans. Their idea, again, like it was with Halloween and many of the other pagan holidays, their idea was to actually morph the traditions and merge them in as Catholic tradition. Now, and this is where the next connection comes with Santa Claus and who he came from. Santa Claus comes from owes his tradition to the Norse god Odin, who's known as, or is also known as, Woden. And by the way, we might recognize that as Woden's Day or Wednesday. Wednesday is where we come up with the name. Well, Odin is where we come up with the name Wednesday. It's a day that honors the Norse god of Odin. Now, today, we're only really familiar with Odin thanks to Marvel Comics as the father of Thor in all of the Thor movies and Anthony Hopkins. That's how we're generally familiar with them. But the origins of Odin, or the pagan Norse god of Odin, actually goes way, way, way back. Back to about 2 BC, before Christ. And the interesting thing was, he's Norse up in like the Germanic areas, but he's also tied in to the god of Mercury, which is a Roman pagan deity. the Romans at that time, just from a historical perspective, the Romans, even though they spent most of their time in the Mediterranean area, they did manage to get up into Europe and Great Britain, and they influenced a lot in that area, especially in religion. Now, even though Odin was the head of the deities of the North gods, he's tied in with Mercury. He's tied in with Mercury Mercury was kind of the messenger to the dead, and that's kind of what Odin is. And when they were looking at Odin, he is kind of known as the god in charge of wealth, health. He's the god of the dead, and he's also, what was it? He was the god of the frenzy. But every year, yes, that's right, death, war, healing, and the frenzy. But the interesting thing is, and this brings us back to Santa Claus and Christmas, every year around the middle of winter, which is coincidental with the winter solstice, the Norse or the Germanic tribes would have a Yule festival in dedication to the god of Odin. Now, we also know this because we see it on billboards and everybody wishing you happy Yule tidings. We get terms like Yule tidings, Yule time cheer, and then many people will end up burning the Yule log. But traditions associated with the Yule is strikingly similar to Santa Claus. Now, one thing that we've noticed, and I remember this as a kid, we've heard it around, parents will frequently tell their kids, be good. If you're good, Santa will bring you a good present. Well, that tradition goes way, way, way back to that time frame, and in particular into the Norse god, or into the Norse region. And in particular, there was one tradition which is a bit more gruesome than what we're used to. If we're used to be good, Santa Claus will give you a present. If he doesn't, he'll give you a lump of coal. There was a character in Icelandic tradition that they would lie to their kids and tell their kids about, and it was an ogre by the name of Gyrla and her 13 evil Yule lads. Now, Gyrla was half ogre, half troll, with hooves and horns, 15 tails, and large warts on her nose. But during the time of the Yule, she would send her 13 Yule lads down the mountain from where she lived to snatch unruly kids and bring them back and cook them and eat them. And that was the threat that they used their parents. But at that time, when she would, quote, presently send their kids, the 13 Yule lads down, or Yule elves, these little Yule characters, and there were names for them, they would all come down in red and white suits. Now, the kids, in an attempt to be good, would put their shoes out on the window ledge in an attempt to hopefully get some sort of special gift or toy from the Yule lads. And if you were a bad kid, you would get a rotten potato or some sort of rotten piece of fruit. Now, they never complained, because getting a rotten potato sure beats getting eaten. So that was kind of where the tradition came from there. But the interesting thing is, we are all used to the jolly old fat guy with the white hair. But the interesting thing is, Santa Claus, or the character that runs around giving gifts to the good children and punishing the bad, is not consistent throughout the world, in particular Europe. Now, just to name off a couple of the few that I found, in Germany, he's referred to as Krampus, which is a demonic being that whips and kidnaps children for misbehaving. Sweden and Norway, they're very similar. My Swedish is bad, but the name is something along the lines of Jolteton. And he looks more like a garden gnome. And traditionally, the garden gnome character was a barn devil that is supposedly acting as a guardian over the farms. And the one another one I found was interesting was from Austria, Switzerland, and Germany. They have Christkind or Christel, which, by the way, we get Kris Kringle. That's kind of where that comes from. But it turns out this character, Christen, can be also translated as Christ Child, which is a benevolent female running around giving gifts to the good kids. And then you have in Finland, you have what's also known, I'm not even going to try to pronounce the Finland version of it, but it's a what they call a Yule goat. And they still have it to this day. I saw pictures of it. But the Yule goat is a malevolent, a bad spirit, a bad demonic spirit associated with Norse god, guess who? Odin. Now, according to the tradition, this Norse, the Yule goat, runs around demanding gifts and leftovers after the Yule festival. Now that comes back to the United States. Where did we come from? Where does this all come from? The tradition of Christmas and Santa Claus was actually resisted by the Puritans and many of the religious Christians that came over here around the 1700s, but it wasn't popular until the turn of the 20th century, the early 19th century, and in particular, Washington's Irving's poem, "'Twas a Night Before Christmas." And you know, the funny thing is, I've heard it so many times over the years, I could probably cite about half of it. You know, "'twas a night before Christmas and all through the house, blah, 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 blah." But the character that we're familiar with today comes from, thank you very much, Coca-Cola advertisements. And then hence, right around the turn of the century, and that is how we see the character who it is today. So that begs the question after our little history lesson. Is it so bad? And the answer is, obviously, yes. We have this jolly, happy, pleasant-looking character as the front man for the pagan winter solstice or Yule festival. But I want to also argue that it's a bit more deceitful and a bit more dangerous than that. So now we're here on the Sabbath, so the good thing to do is turn to our Bible. So the first verse I'd like to turn to is 2 Corinthians. 2 Corinthians and chapter 11 and in verse 13. And here Paul is talking about false prophets. And in verse 13, "For such are false prophets, deceitful workers, transforming themselves into the apostles of Christ. And no wonder, for Satan himself transforms himself into an angel of light." Now, my argument here today is that Satan has pulled a fast one over everybody's eyes with regards to Santa Claus. Santa Claus is, if you think about it, is a very tricky and very dangerous counterfeit to the one and only Jesus Christ. And we have that for a couple reasons. There are a couple very tricky similarities. First of all, what's one of the common things we think about with Santa Claus throughout the rest of the year? He is up in his North Pole, in his workshop, as a craftsman, building toys. Now, if we go to Mark 6, let's go to Mark 6. And in verse 2, "And when the Sabbath had come, he, Christ, began to teach in the synagogues, and hearing him were astonished, saying, "Where did this man get these things? And what wisdom is this, which is given to him, that such mighty works are performed by his hand? Isn't this not the carpenter, the craftsman, the son of Mary, and the brother of James, Joseph, Judas, and Simon? And are not his sisters here with us?" So they were offended at him. Christ and them were both, I maybe you would think it is stretch as saying that this was a counterfeit, but I don't. Christ was a carpenter. He was a craftsman. And the next one, which I think is quite a bit more dangerous, but there was another thing. You see pictures of kids throughout the year or at Christmas time. What is the common image that you see? Going to the shopping mall and sitting on the lap of children of Santa Claus, getting touched. Now, Mark 10. Another very famous verse about Jesus Christ. Mark 10 and in verse 13. "Then they brought little children to him," to Christ, "that he might touch them. But of course the disciples rebuked those who brought him. And when Jesus saw it, he was greatly displeased and said to them, 'Let the little children come to me, and do not forbid them, for of such is the kingdom of God. Assuredly, I say to you, whoever does not receive the kingdom of God as a little child will by no means enter it.'" And in verse 16, "He took them in his arms, laid his hands on them, and blessed them." Exactly like what happens at the mall with Santa Claus. He is a counterfeit. Another simple one, kids are taught that if they have a wish list, what are you to do? Write your letter to Santa. According to the U.S. Postal Service, and I never did get an exact number, but literally, they say literally millions of letters annually are written to Santa Claus. What they do with all those letters beats me. Doesn't matter. But in Matthew 7, you have a wish, write a letter to Santa. Matthew 7, and in verses 7 through 11. "Ask, and it shall be given you. Seek, and you shall find. Knock, and it will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, and he who seeks finds, and to him who knocks it will be opened. Or what man is there among you who, if his son asks for a bread, will you give him a stone? Or if he asks for a fish, will he give him a serpent? If then," in verse 11, "being evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father who is in heaven give good things to those who ask him?" They're told to ask Santa. But who are we to ask? We are to ask God. And the last one that I think I'm going to bring up this morning, and there are a number of others, but Santa is supposedly omniscient. You know, you've got that famous Christmas song, "He'll know if you're bad or good, so please be good." He will know. Somehow he knows, and he's got that magic list. He can see through things. But in Psalm 139, okay, I'm getting there. Psalm 139. Here we are. Psalm 139 and verse 7. "Where can I go from your spirit? Or where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend into heaven, you are there. And if I make my bed in hell, behold, you are there. In verse 9, if I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the utmost parts of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me and your right hand shall hold me. He knows it all. He knows what we think. He knows what we are. And he hears what we say. So now there is no denying the fact that the smells are pleasant. There's no defined fact that the sights, you know, they're pretty with all the colors. Every year, people bring all these wonderful desserts into work. And there's no defined fact that all those desserts look and taste good. But it begs the question, how can all this wonderful stuff be bad? And it is. Because Santa Claus, along with the other Christian traditions, is Satan's distraction to distract us from the fact that Christmas actually comes from pagan festivals honoring pagan gods and the winter solstice, as opposed to being a time of Christ. Now, it was an interesting thing. Back in the late 90s, I got a hold of, this was after I left Worldwide Church of God, I got a Plain Truth magazine. And I read in the editorial article, the writer said, "We are winning over Christmas, the pagan holiday, for Christ. It can't be done." So what's the bottom line? The bottom line is this. And let's turn to Deuteronomy 12, please. Deuteronomy 12, and this is the bottom line. Deuteronomy 12 and in verse 29. "When the Lord your God cuts off from before you the nations which you go to dispossess, and you displace them and dwell in their land, take heed to yourself that you are not ensnared to follow them after they are destroyed from before you, and that you do not inquire after their gods, saying, 'How did these nations serve their gods? I also will do likewise.'" And in verse 31, "You shall not worship the Lord your God in that way. For every abomination to the Lord which he hates, they have done to their gods, for they burn even their sons and daughters in fire to their gods. Whatever I command you, be careful to observe it. You shall not add to it nor take away from it."